Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk. Tonight we got a good show for you. We're going to talk about the Fury Wilder 3 fight. Talk about that a little bit. Jump into the news of Jorge Masvidal versus Leon Edwards. And then we're going to just talk a little bit about UFC 267. You know, a lot going on. There was another fight that came out. Ponzinibbio versus, let me make sure I got the right fight, but that was announced too. Let me find it real quick. Masvidal Edwards. Masvidal Edwards and Jeff Neal versus Ponzinibbio on December 11th at UFC 269. So those two fights were announced over the past weekend. Both should be hell of a fights, you know. Especially the Masvidal Leon Edwards fight, as you know, that fight has been brewing since Masvidal cheap shotted Leon Edwards a couple years back when he said the three piece on a biscuit or three piece on a soda or whatever. So we should see what happens. But it's good to see two top five guys fighting in this weight division. Leon Edwards, me personally, if I was him, I would have waited. I would have waited for a title fight. But, you know, I think this is the fight he's been wanting. So, he gets that fight. So, hopefully he can pull it out and then he has a true claim to a title fight. But we should see how it all shakes out, you know, once those two step in the octagon. For those that don't know, Jorge Masvidal has been dipping his feet into the wrestling world with AEW. Want to say AEW has a card coming to Miami. I want to say the 15th. No, it can't be the 15th. Actually, it should be here pretty soon. Maybe it's Friday or maybe even Saturday. AEW is coming to Miami and, you know, they're hyping up Masvidal being in the corner of two of the wrestlers that came, Junior Dos Santos. So we should see what happens. Actually, Masvidal looked like wrestling could be a thing he could actually be able to do and actually be pretty good at it from the little bit I saw him in the wrestling ring. So we'll see what happens. But what's up, Keys? How you doing, bro?
I mean, one thing is I think Masvidal, I think the point that he's at right now is he realized that, okay, so he had a couple fights. He won a couple fights. He went on a run a little bit. I wouldn't even really say he went on a run, but he had a 3-fight win streak. And I think it really got to his head. And then, you know, the fan base that he built and that was pretty much the highest his career has ever been. And it's still pretty much at the highest it's been, even though I would think a lot of those same fans kind of dropped off seeing him lose twice, you know, to Kamaru Usman. I think he got hit. It's like he ran into a brick wall with those two title fights he lost, especially this past one where he got KO'd like that in the way that he did. And he really was never in that fight. You know, Usman was out striking him, you know, from the opening bell to his closing bell. when the fight was finished. So I think it just kind of he ran into a brick wall, and I think it was a realization of, wait a second, I think he's realizing that he's in a 170 pound division that is a lot more difficult than the run he just went on. You know, like, I think where he thought he was at, and I might sound like a big hater saying this, but I think there's some truth to this. I think the level that he thought he was at, that run he went on, gave him this perception of himself that he was at a much higher level than he's actually at. And now that he's seeing, you know, he lost twice, now he's going to fight Leon Edwards, who, that's a very difficult fight for Masvidal. It's a winnable fight. You know, he could win the fight, but I would say, you know, that's a very difficult fight. It's not an easy win. And a lot of the other competitors, 170 pounds, you know, Gilbert Burns, Stephen Thompson, who's already beat Masvidal before pretty dominantly, I would say, you know, a lot of these guys are very high level guys. And I think he's just maybe taking a look at the division and he's like, wow, I really do have, you know, the odds kind of stacked against me in this division. It's a difficult division, and that's really for anybody. But I like, just with the run he went on, I think it gave him this almost false perception of the level that he is at as a fighter, because he was fighting guys that really weren't the best welterweights. Those were just, you know, kind of, you know, guys that aren't really in the division, or they're not ranked in the division, they're not in the organization, whatever. You know, those aren't top guys he was fighting, but it was kind of propped up as if they were top guys. They really weren't. So now that he has to fight the top guys, he's losing. Now he's getting Leon Edwards, who he may very well lose that fight, and that would be a 3-fight losing streak. And then after that, it doesn't even get easier from that point, you know, win or lose. So I think, you know, wrestling, I can understand why he would be dipping his feet over there, because over there he can start up a new name for himself and bring a lot of his fan base that, you know, he built in the last 2 years, he can bring over there and say, okay, they'll watch me over here. Plus, you know, he has the personality at this stage to develop a lot of new fans over there too. And I'm sure the bag is right too. So I don't blame him for doing that, you know?
Yeah, this wrestling and MMA crossover is actually something that's, I think, is only going to grow. You know, Cain Velasquez is a wrestler now. I want to say he's making an appearance at some organization this weekend. Junior Dos Santos, like I said, he's making his wrestling debut coming up, I want to say, this weekend also. You know, of course, Brock Lesnar. Then you got Bobby Lashley, who's in WWE right now, who was just a champ. You know, then you got my man, Hager, who's an AEW, who's also an undefeated MMA wrestler with Bellator, I want to say. And then you got King Mo, who's dipping his feet in the wrestling. So you have a lot of guys that's, you know, that you're going to see cross over from UFC, Bellator, MMA to wrestling, because basically it's the same thing, especially if they have a background in wrestling. So I like it. Masvidal, like I said, he did look good in the brief stint that they try to highlight him in. He looked good. So, you know, like you said, he fought, was it Darren Till? Was it Darren Till that he knocked out, or was it Wonderboy?
Yeah, yeah.
I said it was Wonderboy.
No.
It was Wonderboy, right? It was Till?
No, he lost to Wonderboy, unanimous decision.
Uh-huh.
And then he knocked out. And then after that, he didn't fight for like a year and a half or something like that. And then he came back. He fought Darren Till. He knocked him out. Then he fought Ben Askren. He knocked him out. And then he fought Nate Diaz, and that was Dr. Stoppage, TKO.
Yeah, so like you said, those three guys are basically name fighters. You know, Ben Askren, we knew he couldn't strike. On the way he was going to win, on the way he was going to beat Masvidal was taking him down. Nate is just a guy that's going to stand and bang with you. So that's a custom-made fight for Masvidal also. But like you said, man, this division, you have to be able to do more than one thing. When Usman first won the belt, me and you were very skeptical of how long he could be champ, because at the time, he was basically a take-you-down, ground-and-pound-you type of guy. But now, since he's been a champion, his striking has actually caught up to his wrestling. So, like he's been saying, where do you want it at? I can take it anywhere you want to go. So, but I'm glad to see Masvidal fighting Edwards. I think that's a great fight. You said it's winnable. I don't think Masvidal can beat Edwards. I think Edwards can do too many things in the octagon. And I think Edwards has motivation. He has the motivation of knowing that if he wins this fight, he's definitely getting the next shot. And he has the revenge thing also. So we should see how it shakes out.
I mean, I'm saying it's winnable in the respect of Masvidal. Like, I believe he could win the fight, but I'm not saying that's the more likely scenario.
Scenario?
Yeah, I'm saying that's not the more likely scenario. I would say him winning the fight is probably, you know, very, I'd say it's more unlikely than not that he loses the fight, I believe. I think that's the fight that he loses. But I do think he could beat Leon Edwards. Like, I wouldn't say there's no way. You know, I think he could beat him. You know what I mean? I think he could, but do I think it will happen? I'd say probably not. That's kind of what I was trying to get with that.
I got you. Basically, you're saying it's a winnable fight. But once again, it all depends on the style of the fight. I think if it's a stand-up fight, Masvidal definitely has a puncher's chance because he do have hands. But one thing about Edwards is Edwards reminds me of John Jones when he was coming up. Edwards' striking is so crisp, so clean, and so technical, and he uses kicks. So I think it has the makings of being a great fight. If both guys engage each other and not try to go in there and be technical, the fight could be a banger. But I think Leon Edwards doesn't want to get in there and try to mix it up with Masvidal, because as we saw when he fought Nate, when he got caught, he just didn't seem like the same guy after he got caught. So I think he'll be very cautious, but I still, if I had to pick it down, I would say Leon Edwards wins this fight because he has more to lose. So he should come in being the guy fighting as the more desperate fighter. If I was in his corner and I was managing him, if I was training him, from the day we start training, you got more to lose in this fight than Masvidal, and more to gain also.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, Leon Edwards, you know, if he wins that one, you got to put him in there for the title. You know, you definitely got to put him in there for the title. Stranger things have happened, though. So, you know, if he didn't get in there for the title. Yeah, if he didn't get in there, I mean, look at Tony Ferguson. Max Holloway, they both had a fight, you know, 10-plus fights to get to the belt, which – was pretty crazy if you really think about it. But either way, you know, he knows that I think it is more likely he would fight for the belt if he wins. So he'll have that on his mind. He felt like he already should be already should have been fighting for the belt, you know, not have – he felt like he didn't need to take this fight, but he did. So, yeah, I think Edwards and there's been kind of a lot of – there actually has been a lot of back and forth between those two guys. I almost kind of forget that. Masvidal actually basically slapped – I think it was like a slap. He actually slapped Edwards backstage. I want to say it was like 2 or 3 years ago. He actually slapped Edwards. I kind of forgot about that because I was – kind of seems like a while ago now. But, yeah, so they kind of have some history there, and I really forgot about that. So I think the two of them, you know, it definitely has the makings for a really good fight. I definitely think that Edwards will keep the fight standing. I think he's confident in beating Masvidal on the feet. I don't think he's afraid of that. And, I mean, especially after seeing Masvidal get KO'd in the last fight, I mean, Edwards has a lot of weapons, you know, on the feet. He has a lot of weapons. And, you know, he even has does he do the spinning elbow or spinning back fist or both? I've definitely seen highlights of him. He does both, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I want to say, I don't know if I saw it in his Nate fight, but I want to say I've seen highlights of some of his other fights, and I want to say I've seen clips of him doing both a spinning elbow and a spinning back fist. So, and there's not a lot of guys that do that kind of shit nowadays. There really isn't. Like, I feel like it used to be more common, and John Jones used to do it, but nowadays it's kind of scarce. You really see a spinning back fist. You know, I feel like it's not an easy thing to do. But yeah, Edwards got a lot of weapons. I think it'll be a good fight. It's going to be an interesting fight.
Yeah, man. But look, man, let's talk about this real quick. Saturday night, we had the trilogy fight between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. Once again, Fury comes out on top via TKO. I tweeted out that, you know, it was a great fight. Wilder did show me some different things in the fight. But until he can use his left hand, he's not going to be a good fighter, a good boxer. What was your thoughts on the fight Saturday? Did you watch the fight Saturday?
Yeah, I actually did watch the fight. That was the only fight of that trilogy that I did watch. So that makes sense that you would ask that. And I normally don't watch boxing, but I watched the fight, and this is what I really thought. So I thought that the one thing that I was pretty disappointed in Fury, his performance overall in that fight. A lot of people were probably kind of looking at me strange for saying that, but because everyone's saying, like, oh, this was an all-time great fight. I mean, I think it is an all-time great fight. It is. I think it very likely is. I mean, I don't know boxing as well as other people to really know what to compare it to. So I don't really have as much ground to stand on saying, oh, it's an all-time great boxing fight. I've maybe seen 5 or 6 boxing fights, like maybe 10 max I probably watched. So I don't really have much of a catalog of fights to really compare that to, especially heavyweight fights. So I'm not going to say that. I don't know enough to say it, but I do think it was an entertaining fight. I'm disappointed in Fury's performance. Because I felt like he was headhunting too much. It looked like he was a bit emotional in there. It looked like he was really trying for the knockout, and it was almost like it was dragging him away from his boxing. It was making him less of the tactician that he seems to be. You know, it was making him more sloppy. The shot selection, as Conor McGregor would say, was sloppy. And it seemed he was putting himself in harm's way a lot. You know, he was ducking down. I feel like he was leaving his chin open a lot of times. And then, you know, all the clinching, and he kept doing like that headlock thing, which I didn't really understand that. I didn't know that was a thing in boxing, but he kept doing that. I don't know. I wasn't too impressed with Fury overall, but I mean, he did get the win. I think, yeah, it was a great win, but I think he could have looked a lot better. And he said it himself after the fight that wasn't his best night. So yeah, that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, I think Deontay came out with a solid game plan in the first round as far as, you know, establishing the jab, going to the body, you know. I was like, okay, you know, he bringing some different things to the table. Then, you know, he gets knocked down, and then he comes back and he knocks Fury down twice. And then after that, it just seemed like he was gassed. It was like, damn, bro, you tired already? We only like in the fourth or fifth round. This is a 12-round fight. But, you know, Fury, with the clinching and the holding him down, he made Deontay carry his weight. And I think that added to Deontay gassing out, you know, in the fight, because he's a big man himself, and then he's carrying another big man's weight. So, you know, that added to him being tired, and that gave Fury, you know, time to, you know, implement his game plan, establish his jab, and just wear Deontay out. But Deontay, Fury isn't scared of his left hand. So, as you saw, every time Fury will always circle away from his right hand because he knew Deontay wouldn't throw anything with his left hand. So until Deontay can do something with that left hand, bro, he's just not going to be an effective fighter. He has to develop some kind of punch with that left hand, whether it's a jab, a left hook, something. He has to make that left hand something that opponents will respect. You know, right now, only thing people know is that stay away from his right hand. Stay away from his right hand, and you got a chance to survive the fight. So he showed great heart Saturday, but once again, the better fighter won. Although, you know, it didn't look good, Fury did everything that he's supposed to do in there, and he cleaned on Wilder out. Me personally, I think the next thing up for these two guys, I'd rather see Wilder fight Joshua, and I'd rather see Fury and Usyk unify the titles. And then the winner of Wilder, Joshua, should get the first crack at a unified champion. So guarantee it ain't going to work like that, because Joshua already done said he's going to get his rematch with Usyk sometime next spring. So, you know, man, that's just one of the things about boxing that's frustrating, is you just can't – you can never seem to unify titles.
Yeah, I mean – And one thing, you know, I should have got to, you know, I didn't even say anything on how I felt about Wilder's performance. So first of all, Wilder to me, and I'm not the boxing expert, you know, Lee's the boxing expert, but I'm the novice, you know, the boxing novice, if anything. But to me, I thought Wilder, you know, of all the footage that I've seen of him, and I watched his fight. I think it was in 2019, his Ortiz rematch. From the way he looked in that fight, I thought he looked a lot better. That was the last full fight that I watched Wilder. So I thought he looked a lot better than that performance. And then from the highlights of the other fights, he looked a lot better in this fight versus the other two Fury fights, I think. In the second fight, it seemed like from what I saw in the highlights, Fury was coming forward. And one thing that I said, and I felt like this was like a mental, this was a mental warfare thing, and I've said this on the show many times. I think this was a psychological warfare thing, but just a part of the psychological fight in the ring was being back down and controlling the ring. And I think that's one thing that Wilder is more so used to doing in his fights. Now, I haven't seen all his fights, but I get the sense that he is used to feeling the sense that his opponents are intimidated and they're scared. So I think he feeds off that, and that's not a bad thing. It's just that once Fury came out in the rematch and was instantly clearly not afraid of him or his power or anything, was immediately took control of the ring and walking him down and just throwing tail shots right out the gate, I feel like interrupted Wilder's thought process. He's not used to that. He's not used to guys coming out like that, so especially so early in the fight, right out the gate like that. So I think that really threw him off. I think in this fight, he was prepared, and he was prepared to combat that right away. And when he came out right in the first round, Wilder, very impressed with it. Wilder came forward, and he established his dominance right away. He was throwing kill shots on Fury. It looked like to me he wanted to get him out of there in the first two rounds. It looked like to me he wanted to put Fury away in the first two rounds. That's I really was like, oh man, like this, you know. And then he knocked Fury down. Like, oh man, like it really looked like Wilder was trying to put him away in those first couple rounds, you know. And yeah, so I think that was a big thing in the fight. Wilder definitely showed a lot of heart overall. And, you know, he, like I said, he came back, and I feel like he corrected an area where he fell short in the rematch. I feel like he came back and corrected that. I think he acknowledged what happened with that, and he came back and made an adjustment to not allow that to happen again. So he came out, and he fixed that, and that I think was a good thing. He made it 11 rounds, and he got hit with a lot of big shots. They both got hit with a lot of big shots, but Wilder got, you know, you watch the replays, he got hit with a lot of crazy shots, you know, that would kill any of us, you know. One of those, you know, shots he took would probably kill most of us. So a lot of respect for him. You know, I've gained a lot of respect for him. You know, that loss is not, to me, is not, obviously you have to take something from every loss, and you have to learn from every loss and accept the loss. But that is not his – to me, the performance he put on is, even though there are things to fix, like you were saying, and he's got to establish – he has to establish, I think you said, his left hand too. Yep. Even though there are things to work on, performance itself and the heart that he showed is nothing to be – ashamed of, you know. I feel like that is a lot to be proud of there, you know. That's how I feel about that.
Yeah, that fight you was talking about, that fight with Ortiz, the funny thing about that fight is he was losing that fight on all the judges' scorecards until he knocked him out. And you know why he was losing that fight? Because he wasn't throwing punches. In boxing, you have to be active. You have to throw punches. You got to throw jabs. You know, you have to have some kind of offensive output. And that Ortiz fight, he had basically no output until he landed that right hand. Until he hurt Ortiz with that right hand, he was losing that fight because he doesn't have what I call is a setup game. A setup game is what you use to set up the knockout or to set up the kill shot. Normally, most fighters, what they do is they use a jab, they use body shots, they use a lot of pressure, like what Fury did to him. When Fury, after Fury got knocked down, and he came and got knocked down twice in that one round, when you saw when he came back out, he started backing Deontay back. He started making Deontay be a defensive fighter. And that was what he was using to set up his knockout, was to make him be a defensive fighter, keep throwing punches, and he might not see this one punch that I'm going to throw, and that might be the one that I get him out of here with. So, but like you said, Deontay should be proud. I think he probably shouldn't want to fight Fury again. Who knows what happens when, you know, you have a unified heavyweight title bout. You know, I'm quite sure Fury would probably tell Wilder that he's going to fight him over in the UK instead of in the States. So that's going to be a whole different set of circumstances for Wilder. Having to travel overseas, he's going to be in hostile territory. and he's going against a guy that he hasn't beaten. So, but like I said, I'd rather them unify the belts and then have Wilder and Joshua go at it. I think that would be the best way to go, because then you have a clear-cut champion, one champion, and everybody knows who's the champion and who's at the top of the mountain. So, but, you know, outside of that, you know, it was good to see real boxing. I know me and you are tired of this celebrity stuff. You know, this Jake Paul versus Tyron Woodley and, you know, all this stuff. So it was finally good to see two boxers actually square off in a boxing ring. Whew.
So one thing I was talking to, ironically, I was talking to my boy Dylan, and this is they're funny, they have the same name. He told me that Dillian White is the mandatory challenger to Tyson Fury's world titles. So would he have to fight Dillian White next? Wouldn't they force him to fight him?
Well, there are things in boxing that money can sometimes, you know, buy. I think they could probably give Dillian White probably give him a little, what I want to say, hush money to not scream and holler about getting a mandatory shot and have Fury fight Usyk. But being that Usyk is going to fight Anthony Joshua, then I guess it's going to be Dillian White versus Tyson Fury. But Dillian White is a guy that you got to just do a little bit of reading on. He's kind of like he has a lot of issues sometimes, you know, as far as, you know, being able to be a professional. So maybe he'll get his act together because he knows he's the mandatory contender. So, hey, I do kind of like this fight, but I don't think Dillian White can beat Fury either. I think Fury is so good at being a boxer at the heavyweight, in the heavyweight division. Klitschko was a boxer in the heavyweight division. That's why he was champ so long. So, but I like Fury versus Dillian White, being that we already know Joshua is going to fight Usyk. So, you know, that mean that, you know, both that he'll be staying active.
All right, I mean, we'll see what happens with that. I mean, on that front, I did have some other topics there, but I figured I'd bring this up because we kind of have to bring this up. I just saw this a couple hours ago, and this is relevant to something that you say, but I know. So it's part of what you have always said that you think should happen with John Jones. Did you see that Mike Winklejohn temporarily suspended John Jones from the gym until he can clear up some of his personal issues?
Good. I think this is one of the things that you have to do when you have a person that is constantly getting in trouble, or they have demons that need to be taken care of in their personal life. The UFC, they really not going to punish any fighter. Me and you have sat on our show, and we have sat on Twitter, and we have seen guys do stuff that if they was in any other sport, that they will probably be fined or suspended, you know, whereas in the UFC always turns the other cheek. They turn a blind eye, I should say. They turn a blind eye to bad behavior. John Jones, he tweeted out earlier that, you know, I'm going to read his tweet. I got it right here. And when I saw it, I was like, well, you know, he's trying to put some spin control on it. But why didn't you say that earlier? You know, let me find it. All right, here we go. His tweet says, where is it at? Actually, he tweeted out a lot of stuff. He said, I love how people are imagining the worst possible situation in their heads and making it somehow factual. I never hit my fiance, and our daughters were woken up after our confrontation. My daughters didn't see or hear us arguing. And then he tweeted again. He said, that's really the only thing I care to clarify. Outside of that, looking forward to moving forward without alcohol. It's the first time in my life where I'm actually ready to quit. Glad to have the support of my fiance, family, friends, and fans. And then he said, somebody tweeted at him, actions speak louder than words, and he came back and said, yep, I totally understand that. That's why I'm not going to do some big PR stunt, hire a publicist. I'm not going to do anything like that. I know it's real. I know that I'm ready. Time will take care of the rest. So I like what Winkle John and them is doing. You have to punish him in some way, form, or fashion. Although I know when he's in the gym, he's out of trouble, but it's time for him to learn how to live with your personal demons and being able to be a functioning human being within society, when even though you're not training or you're not in fight mode. You shouldn't have to always be on the job for you to be a functioning human being in society. So I like it. Hats off to them. And, you know, I'm a big John Jones fan, man. But like I always wrote when I wrote my article about John Jones, sometimes talent and character don't even out. But when you are a top flight athlete, you should care about your public perception. You know, you should care what people think about you. Sometimes, even like me, I'm his number one fan. But when I first heard about this story, the first thing I thought about was his kids. I was like, come on, bro. You know, you can't really, you know, you got to be better than that, especially in front of your kids or around your kids. So, you know, man, get better, John. I'm praying for you, bro.
I think at this point, when I saw that earlier, I didn't see that tweet, but I saw Winkle John. And when I saw that, what he was saying, you know, John Jones put, I did see, he put out a response to Winkle John suspending him. And he said, like, you know, just got off the phone. It was like a heartbreaking, very heartbreaking conversation. You know, with, yeah, I don't want to butcher his words, but he kind of referenced that conversation probably when Winkle John told him he was suspended. And, you know, he said, like, some kind of, he said, like, shout out to, like, his, or, like, some kind of salute to, like, I guess he has some other coaches that are still going to work with him for the time being. But that's good. But at the same time, I think it's good that, you know, his other coaches still wanting to train with him. That's, I mean, I really think they should follow suit and follow the, well, not even call suit, they should follow the good example that Winkle John set and say, we need you to take care of, you know, these situations in your life and try to clean up your act a little bit and figure out what's going on and, you know, with you mentally. And then we can continue to work with you. I think they should be following the good example and not saying, oh, we'll continue to work with you. I don't think they should be doing that. So I disagree with that. But either way, I'm just happy that somebody is stepping up and trying to, you know, create some kind of punishment or some kind of consequence to – no, not consequence. I don't even know what the right word is, but – somebody stepping up and just saying that we can't accept you doing this, you know, and put a barrier there, put a barrier you know, in front of him as a result of what he's done, and an important barrier, you know, a barrier to Mike Winkler, John Jim, like that is to Jack Nowinka, is that's a big barrier for John Jones. You know, he's been there for some time, and I'm sure he has a great relationship with those guys. So not being able to train there is that's a strong barrier that's a strong roadblock to put in front of him. But you know, something like that might actually push him to, you know, make some changes in his life and tackle some of his demons. You know, the ones that he needs to. You know, Dana White doesn't seem to want to do anything about doesn't want to put any roadblock in front of John Jones, you know, to kind of give him a punishment for, you know, what he does, you know. So it's Dana White kind of seems to want to enable him to continue doing things, and many other fighters, like you said, Dana White seems to want to enable him. You know, I know they just released Luis Pena. I don't know if you saw that. UFC just released Luis Pena because he had, I guess, two domestic violence charges in the year 2021. So they released him. I'm glad to see that they're releasing somebody for these types of, you know, that they're taking action in some way with some fighters. You know, I don't really like the fact that they're coming down on some of the some of the lesser known names like Luis Pena versus a John Jones, who's like a household name. They don't want to come down, you know, Dana White doesn't want to come down on him, but he wants to come down on Luis Pena. I feel like that's kind of strange to me.
Hey, Keith, go ahead and say what you want to say, man. Go ahead and say what you want to say. Luis Pena ain't bringing in the money that John Jones can bring in. So them cutting Luis Pena isn't hurting the bottom line, because they know that when they put John Jones in a fight, it's going to draw. He's going to get, especially in his next fight, it's going to be his first fight at heavyweight. They know that they still got a cash cow in John Jones. They don't have a cash cow in Luis Pena. And that's why they cut him. And that's why they keep putting up with John Jones shit. Just say it.
Yeah. Yeah. See, you know, most of us understand that. And it's just, but that overall is, I don't think that's, I mean, it's a similar, the case with John Jones is a similar case with Conor McGregor. And is that, look at how Conor McGregor has had a lot of situations pop up and, you know, wrongdoings that he's been a part of, and that he, you know, situations he was in that he should have had, the UFC should have came down on him for. But it's the same case of, okay, well, if we ban, you know, if we suspend him or whatever we want to do, then that's taking away somebody who, you know, puts a lot of butts in seats, just like John Jones. So I feel like those two guys, and I hate to compare them in your presence because that's probably two polar opposites for you. You actually pretty much love John Jones and probably couldn't be much less of a fan of Conor McGregor. So it's tough for me to make that comparison to you, but really overall, as far as the legal issues versus them as a UFC athlete, and their drawing power, it's just kind of doesn't mean that it's right. You know, it's not okay that their drawing power takes precedent over their wrongdoings in the real world. You know, it shouldn't be that way. They should have to, like, just like when you were saying about 2018, when McGregor threw the thing, the dolly, he threw the whole bunch of things that he did to the UFC box. You know, he threw a whole bunch of things, but either way, you were saying that the fact that you said back then that if they don't take some kind of action to show, if they don't take some kind of action against McGregor, like, it's just going to, things are going to continue to happen. You know, he's going to feel okay with continuing to do the wrong thing and feel like he can get away with it. And really, since that time, there has been, you know, a handful more incidents since that time. The UFC doesn't say anything about it or do anything about it. So you were right in that aspect. I mean, maybe those other situations aren't as big of a deal to them as, you know, attacking the UFC bus. But, I mean, that itself should have been, you know, a healthy suspension for Conor McGregor, or a healthy fine, or both for Conor McGregor. So the fact that he was able to fight later that same year is just, I mean, yeah, of course, as a fan, I'm going to watch it. But overall, if we're going to talk, you know, what's ethical and real life and setting the right example, I think they need to do the right thing with John Jones. And I just think that I'm glad that Wingo John stepped out and made that decision, even though if some people, you know, aren't happy about that.
Well, I think John, number one, I think when he really sit down and he thinks about it, he'll realize that Wink isn't, like, betraying him or turning his back on him. Wink is doing something that the UFC refuses to do, and that is to stop enabling him. Time for you to face your problems. Time for you to get your life in check. Time for you to become a meaningful citizen in society. And if the UFC, and as you said, the UFC is not going to do it. So, once again, I applaud Winklejohn and the coaches that go behind his back and continue to work out with John. I think if Wink finds out who they are, he should suspend them for the amount of time that John is suspended without pay. That'll get their attention, that he's not playing and that he means what he says. So, but you, as a professional organization, you are only taken seriously when fans take your athletes or the faces of your organization seriously. Like the face of the NFL is Tom Brady. You got Tom Brady, Aaron Donald, probably Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, you know, people like that. Face of the NBA, LeBron James, Steph Curry. Baseball, you got Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani. UFC, faces of your organization are the people that stay on the front page of the newspaper, John Jones, Conor McGregor. Come on, man. Y'all got to get better. The face of y'all organization being Amanda Nunes, Stipe Miocic, you know, Bullet Valent Shevchenko, you know, people that uplift your sport, you know, don't give sport a bad eye. So, you know, me and Keys, we are definitely fans of MMA, UFC. Another thing we're saying is just be professional, man. There's so many more things about being a professional than just showing up on fight day, getting there, making weight, and putting on good performances. Being a professional means carrying yourself as a professional 24/7. When I was in the Air Force, one thing that we were always taught, if you are on duty 24 hours every day, as long as you're in the military. So every time you were out in public, guess what? You was in the Air Force, regardless if you was in uniform or not. So basically, I never really got in trouble when I was there, because anything that I probably did, it was probably going to hurt my paycheck, and if it hurt my paycheck, it hurt my family. So, man, I mean, we just want the best for everybody, Keys. I know me and you talk about it. You know, we talk about it a lot. We just want everybody to be good people, man. You know, and take care of yourself. Take care of others. So, you know, man, John, get it together, man. And, you know, I think the UFC probably won't put him in a fight. Keys, I'm thinking, probably to the middle of next year. So hopefully by then, man, he'll have everything figured out and worked out.
Yeah, I actually just pulled up the quote from John Jones' tweet, ESPN, we posted it. At the end of his tweet, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just the last sentence said, sincere thank you to the rest of the coaches for staying in the sincere thank you to the rest of the coaches for staying in the fight with me. Our journey continues.
It shouldn't.
Yeah, see, that last part if he did, I don't know. I'm glad he appreciates it, but I don't know if those coaches are doing, I don't know, man, that's tough.
It ain't tough. Winkle John, any coaches that he find out that are working with John while he's suspended, he should suspend him. Suspend him without pay just to send a message.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see what happens with that. I don't know. I mean, if it's anything like the UFC, they like to not take action, so they'll probably do nothing, and that's what we're used to seeing there. So I don't mean to sound so pessimistic, but that's just usually the case. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But one last thing I want to get to, unless you have anything that you want to get to, or can I bring this up?
Oh, go ahead. Let's roll.
You know, I was watching the UFC did a promo the other day. I think it was it at the end of the, was it after UFC 266? Well, no, I think I might have been watching it on ESPN Plus. I might have watched it. They did this big video on Glover Teixeira. And one thing that I didn't know, because I wasn't around during that era. I didn't see him go on a 20-fight win streak, like, to start his MMA career and then get signed to the UFC. Like, I didn't know that they signed him undefeated 20-0. I wasn't aware of that. So I didn't know that he was such a beast. And it just, I mean, obviously, and now he's had a resurgence. You know, we know he's looked good. You know, he pretty much beat the shit out of Anthony Smith, for lack of a better word. I don't remember if he's fought someone else after that fight. I don't remember who he fought after that. I want to say he did, but I'm forgetting. But either way, Glover Teixeira has looked really good. And I'm just wondering, what are you thinking for that will be Jan Blachowicz's first title defense. Would it be? Oh, no. No, he defended against Adesanya. This would be his second title defense. So what do you think about that matchup? I don't think we really talked about that. Jan Blachowicz and this Glover, this recent Glover Teixeira that we've been seeing. What do you think about that fight?
Well, I know what I won't do. I won't go against Jan Blachowicz again, because I know we took him for granted, and it seemed like every time we took him for granted, beating up somebody, putting them down, winning fights. This is his first title defense against a true 205er, going against Glover Teixeira, who's definitely has found a resurgence in his fight career. But I just think Jan is just too good, man. It's just like Jan is just too good, bro. He doesn't get out of really what he wants to do. He sticks to his game plan, and I think he learned from the Santos fight that I have to stick with my game plan. When I don't stick to my game plan, bad things happen. And bad thing happened to him when he got away from his game plan against Santos. He got knocked out. So I like Jan. I like his deliberate style. But if there's any time for Glover Teixeira to win the belt, it's now. Because he's like hotter than fish grease right now. But he was hotter than fish grease when he went against John Jones and he lost. So, I just think it's bad time
bad time, bad place for Glover. I think Bukovic gets it done in a tough fight. I don't know how he gets it done, but I just think he gets it done, and probably in dominating fashion where there is no controversy or somebody can say, well, I think Teixeira might have edged him out. I think he wins hands down.
Yeah, that's – I'm going the same way. We know that, you know, in the past, every time that we've doubted Jan Błachowicz, he just comes in and kicks ass. So I remember I doubted him versus Luke Rockhold, and one of my cousins was like, man, watch. Błachowicz is going to knock him out. First or second round, he's going to knock him out. Rockhold's done. And I was like, nah, man, I think Rockhold's going to – come up in the 205 division, and I was very wrong about that. Błachowicz sent him to the Matrix, man. He sent Rockhold to the... I'm telling you, Błachowicz sent Rockhold to the dark realm, man. He sent them to the sunken place, man. He got Rockhold clean up out of there, man. That was like, wow. I was like, wow, that was that moment when I was like, damn, Rocco, really? Błachowicz might have just dug out Rocco's whole chin right with that shot. I want to say it was like an uppercut too, but I want to say it was crazy. He broke his jaw.
Yeah.
So Błachowicz pretty much cleaned out his whole chin and his whole jaw. I didn't know that he broke his jaw from that. That's pretty crazy. So that time was there, and then there was many other times that were there as well. I remember that one, Błachowicz, back when he fought Jimmy Manoa, when they did the rematch with Jimmy Manoa. I remember saying, oh, Jimmy Manoa is going to beat him. Who's this Błachowicz guy? And Błachowicz beat him. You know, that was another time. And then I remember...
Yeah, he said Manoa to retire.
and then I want to say the only time that we doubted, he sent Manoa to retirement pretty much. And then I want to say the only time that we doubted Błachowicz and we were right was versus Thiago Santos. I think that was the only time that we were right about it. And we were about to be wrong. You know, he was beating Santos, but he just really made a mistake and kind of beat himself in the fight. He was going to win that fight, so we were really going to be wrong, you know, going to those scorecards, because that was where it was going, you know, up to that point. And, what are some other times? What were the other fights that we swore he was going to lose and then he ended up winning again? What were some other fights?
Was it the fight after Santos? Was it Anthony Smith? No, he didn't fight Anthony Smith. I think it was after.
He fought Corey Anderson, right?
Yeah,
didn't we both pick?
I think so. I'm looking it up now.
I want to say I picked. I don't know who did I pick. I think I picked Corey Anderson to win that fight. I don't remember who you picked.
Hold on. Yeah, because he knocked out Rockhold. Then he came back and beat Jacare Souza. Was that Jacare that he beat? Yeah. Then he beat Corey Anderson. Then he beat Dominique Reyes. We both picked him to beat Reyes. But I thought he was going to lose to Corey Anderson.
Okay, so there we go. So that whole run right there, I don't remember who I had for him in the Jacare fight. I don't remember that one. But I know for all those other ones, I picked against them. And even versus Adesanya, I suspected that I would be wrong, but I did pick Adesanya. I was like, I feel like Adesanya's gonna beat him, and then Adesanya got dominated. So I doubted him even once he beat Reyes. I doubted him. So no more though, no more. That was the last time. And I want to say on our show, Błachowicz on our show for the Adesanya fight, but then the night of the fight, so it was kind of like 50-50. I think I predicted Błachowicz on the live show, But then the night of the fight, when I was watching it with some of my homies, I said, I think Adesanya is going to win. And I decided to change my pick, which was obviously a mistake. So, yeah, definitely Błachowicz. Hey, I think Glover, you know, I think we will end up seeing win or lose this fight. I think he'll end up. Do you think he'll retire?
I think if he doesn't get it done, I think he might just fight on his contract and then retire. But I wouldn't be surprised if he retired if he lost, because the only way he'll get another title shot is if it's a close fight or something quirky was to happen during the fight. If he gets dominated, there's no way he get another shot. So, I think he might retire if he loses, but I think he'll probably just fight out the rest of his contract and then retire. But look, we done went over time tonight. You know, we talked about a lot tonight. We talked about Leon Edwards and Jorge Masvidal, that fight being announced. We talked about Fury versus Wilder 3. You know, definitely good fight. One for the record books. Another domination, in my opinion, by Fury. Then we talked about, you know, the John Jones, Lewis Pena situation, about how the UFC really doesn't punish fighters for their ill will. I mean, for doing bad citizens. But we tipped our hats to Winklejohn for suspending John for coming to the gym. So, you know, that's good. Then we just talked about, Glover Teixeira versus John Błachowicz, man. And I think it's going to be a good fight. Hey, man, this fight could go either way. But I'm going with the champ. But, you know, we'll see what happens between now and the weekend of that UFC 267. But any last words, bro?
Nah, nothing. Man, I want to say things. One is, like I said, nah, and then I said, yeah, I actually want to say something. two things. One is that I think it was 2 days ago, maybe 3 days ago, it was Mental Health Awareness Day, World Mental Health Awareness Day. So I want to say it, put a shout out to that. And I'm somebody who struggles with mental health, so I want to put that out there for others that, that are dealing with mental health as well. Definitely, you know, just overall for people to pay more attention to it, you know, and your loved ones who are fighting with mental health. You know, I'd say that the people that are fighting with it, you always have people that are there to talk with you and that are by your side, and don't ever feel alone. There's always people out there for you. And for the loved ones of those people, I'd say try to understand it more and don't just shrug it off like, oh, if it's not, you know, a physical illness, then it's not serious. You know, it's all in your head because, you could say that it's all in your head, but I feel like that's something that you need to think about a little bit more. It's all in your head. It is all in your head. Yes, exactly. So let's think about that a little bit. And it's also not just all in the head because it affects their physical surroundings too. When somebody's feeling down, it's going to, you know, bring things around them down too. And it's going to make, you know, their results. It's going to affect, you know, their life around them as well. So it's really not just all in their head, but you know, the struggle is all in their head. So that's not a good thing either. So that's one part.
Yeah.
And also it's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Yeah.
Instead
of Cybersecurity Awareness Month, which is like mad random. But I saw that today. So everybody go and change your passwords right now. And that's it.
Keys with that gym. Because, yeah, he changed our password up to the show and just finally told me. I was like, man, why can't I get in here? But it would let me in, but it would be like, you haven't fully signed in. But, you know, man, the mental health thing is serious.
See, I was hip. You know. Yeah, I was on it. Cyber awareness, my head has changed up.
Yeah. So, you know, the mental health thing, man, you have to not only take care of your physical, but you also have to take care of your mental and your emotional well-being. You know, all that goes hand-in-hand. And for people that know people that struggle with it, just be an ear. You know, be an ear. Look for signs. When you see that things aren't what they're not the way they should be, you know, be there. You know, nobody's saying be a nag, but you should know when somebody's not feeling right or, you know, they not looking right. They just not themselves. So you have to take care of that, man. You know, mental health and all that good stuff, it leads to sometimes untimely deaths, a.k.a. suicides. And most suicides can be prevented, you know, if you look at the signs and, you know, you take care of people. So, you know, hate to end the show on, like, on this kind of note, but it's something that in today's society that, you know, it used to be frowned upon, but now taking care of your mental health is something that's strongly suggested. And, you know, we support all those out there. Me and Keys personally know of a person that struggles with this real bad. And if he listens to the show, you know, man, whenever you need to talk to somebody, give us a call, shoot us a text, you know, man. And, you know, we're there for you. So with that being said, positive people with positive energy yield positive results. And as always, take care of yourself. Take care of each other. The vaccination is a personal choice. If you want it, get it. If you feel a certain way about it, don't. But, you know, live strong. Be strong every day. As always, the end of this show, Lee and Key signing off. And we always end with a peace.